KNOM Update News. I'm Lorelai Kinnean, and it's 9:02. Vancouver-based company Graphite One Resources announced on March 3rd they've finalized all purchases of the land around a promising graphite claim on the Seward Peninsula. The full ownership stake in the area comes ahead of plans to conduct infill drilling this summer, which will assess graphite density in between the exploratory holes already drilled. Dean Besser is Graphite One's vice president of exploration and says infill is a necessary step for measuring the claim's economics.
That's similar to pre-feasibility stage, so applying some economics to ensure that the resource is actually viable or looks to be viable for mining.
This summer, the company will stage operations from a camp off the Teller Road with more employees working in Nome testing deposit samples. Gerald Brown, a vice president at the Bering Straits Regional Corporation, says they've worked with Graphite One the last 2 years, helping with staging logistics and renting storage space at a facility near Icy View. Graphite One has attracted a lot of interest. The city of Nome has referred to the potential value of the deposit to bolster its case for building a deep draft port. And at Monday's Common Council meeting, Port Project Manager Joy Baker spoke of getting inquiries about graphite ore transport from a Norwegian shipping company. But so far, the mining company has not reached out to the nearby communities of Brevik Mission or Teller, both of which would be directly affected if the deposit is mined. Albert O'Quillick has served on the Mary's Igloo Traditional Council based in Teller since 2005. He says the area that would be mined is one of the most important subsistence grounds for people living in the area.
The importance of the Graphite Creek area, it's a food source, seasonal food source. We get moose and muskox and reindeer occasionally, and migratory birds, when they migrate through there, it's an abundant resource. And we also get a lot of our berries for the winter there. It's just a great place to get our winter supply of food.
There's also fishing and a small seal harvest from nearby waters. O'Quillick says that nobody with the three IRAs close by were aware of the claims consolidation, nor have they been contacted by anyone from the company about the possibility of open pit mining near a prime food and water source.
Yeah, we also haven't heard from this company. Now the settlement is final on that, and there is no input. We did not have any input in this, in the decision-making process, so we kind of feel left out. It's going to affect our food security, so.
Matt Ganley is in charge of land and resources for BSNC and says that while they've helped Graphite One with logistics in the region, that has not included contacting any tribal governments. Besser says that Graphite One is waiting until after the Alaska Mining Conference this April to reach out to communities close to the deposit.
Well, we understand that we need to have a presence in the community and educate both the people and the shareholders in the area as to what's going on with respect to Graphite One's exploration campaign, and we aim to do that in both the spring and summer of this year.
Joe Price is project manager for Graphite One, and he said on the phone that the company had held off reaching out to tribes in the region until the claim was proven economically viable. That way they'd have firmer information on hand for those meetings. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency released a report yesterday that critics say would expand the reach of the Clean Water Act to cover most creeks and wetlands across the country. The EPA says the rule would not broaden its jurisdiction. It says the rule just clarifies that most seasonal and rain-dependent streams are protected, as are wetlands near streams. The agency's website says it does not cover ditches or groundwater. The EPA plans a 90-day public outreach tour to explain the rule. The EPA's emphasis is on protecting seasonal waterways. Senator Lisa Murkowski says it will have a large impact on Alaska, too, because the state has abundant wetlands. She says the rule could effectively give the federal government control over most of the state, threatening access and development. With less than 30 days remaining in the legislative session, the Alaska House is considering gas line legislation that would advance a line from the North Slope to an LNG export facility in Nikiski. For rural Alaska, the bill includes funding that could send gas to communities hundreds of miles from the pipeline. The problem, according to Bethel Senator Lyman Hoffman, is that even with gas takeoff points, people in small communities far from the line will miss out.
If you're in Napakiak, how are you going to go to Fairbanks or go to Anchorage where that spigot is and get the gas out here? So even though the bill said that it was going to make gas available to Alaskans, basically those communities and residents along the pipeline were the ones that were going to benefit.
Hoffman pushed through the amendment to create what's called the Alaska Affordable Energy Fund.
Setting aside a fund that could be spent on infrastructure to get natural gas to other areas of the state that are not connected to the pipeline, trying to get the gas to the burner tip of Alaskans.
That could provide money to advance projects like shipping propane down the Yukon River. As written, 25% of royalties will go to the permanent fund. After that, 10% of the remaining royalties would go to the Affordable Energy Fund. The money would not be limited to gas projects. It could address both diesel plus hydroelectric dams, tidal energy, and more. Depending on gas prices and production, Hoffman estimates a range of $100 million to $200 plus million dollars per year. He says that will make a difference in people's energy bills.
For people in rural areas of Alaska, this is the biggest change they have ever seen since statehood.
The language to create the fund is very simple and fits on half a page. Another part of the bill requires the state to develop a plan within 3 years that identifies how to deliver gas to places not directly on the gas line. The name of the fund was originally the Rural Energy Fund. It was changed to the Affordable Energy Fund to include residents who live very close to the line but don't have direct access. Through LNG export, the state and energy producers are looking to sell much of the gas to Pacific Rim countries. As the gas line legislation advances, Hoffman says it's important to prioritize Alaskans' energy needs.
We are finally going to monetize the gas for Alaska. But it was my view that Alaskans wanted more than that. You know, we've always wanted to monetize the gas, but we did not want to make the same mistake we did with taps.
That mistake, Hoffman says, was making money off oil but not reaping the energy benefits. The gas line bill is currently being discussed in several House committees. It would be among the most expensive projects in history, costing between $40 and $65 billion. The Alaska House has passed legislation that would repeal the high school graduation exam. The vote was 32-5. The measure now goes to the Senate. The high school exit exam tests students' aptitude in reading, English, and mathematics. House Bill 220, sponsored by Republican Pete Higgins of Fairbanks, terminates the exam as soon as the bill becomes law. It allows former students who earned enough high school credits to graduate to obtain their diploma, even though they failed the exam. Higgins says if the bill does become law, it will save the state $2.7 million in administrative costs. A look at the price of gold today, down $8.60 an ounce to $1,304.10. An ounce of silver at $19.89, down 22 cents. It's unofficially 11 degrees at the KNOM studios, coming up on 11 minutes after 9 o'clock.